Welcome to the second part of our British Museum episode. This time we won't be interrupted by Isan's cat. The discussion is a bit more fruitful. And in my opinion, we also have some more interesting insights here.
Meow.
She doesn't even sound like that.
Okay, you go.
She just, when she really wants something, she like wows. She like goes like deep baritone, like wow. Like the Pavarotti of cats.
So, Isan, you mentioned earlier that Germany has been very progressive with the Benin bronzes. What has happened there?
They've actually pledged in April 2021, so very recently, to return 530 artifacts in Berlin Ethnological Museum and 440 bronzes from the rest of Germany. And so the government have said that they are point blank going to return these. They've been asked for them by the Nigerian government, and they are just negotiating at the moment how and when the return will take place, allowing for Nigeria to make the first move with this and for them to choose when it would be appropriate to do so. So for anyone who isn't aware with the Benin bronzes, they were taken from what was Benin, now Nigeria, in 1897. Basically, Benin at the time was under British rule to some extent, but they weren't kind of a full colony. And so there was still kind of unrest and backlash against the British being there and being a colonial presence. So there were some guards who killed seven British emissaries as a rebellion against the trade exploitation that was happening in the country. And as a retaliation, the British sent 1,200 troops to basically sack and loot the royal city for treasures. And they decided to fund the expedition by taking what they found. So they found bronzes, sculptures, masks, all kinds of treasures and like cultural objects. And they used that as an economic enterprise to pay for the expedition. And then from then onwards, Benin became a colony until 1960. So it had long-lasting repercussions. And all of the bronzes weren't just taken back to the UK. They were sold across Europe and the US. And most Nigerians have actually never had the opportunity to see them because there are none left in Nigeria, or very few. The British Museum has 900 of them. They have 100 or maybe 200 on display, I think, and the rest are kept in storage. So they're not even all on display at any one time. And they have so far made no comment or no move to send them back, to repatriate them to the Nigerian nation, despite the fact that Nigeria has point blank asked for them. And even France passed a bill in October 2020 to return looted artifacts, including 26 bronzes. Although, putting that in perspective, there are approximately 90,000 African objects in France from their colonial past. So that's, it's only 26 bronzes. It's not like huge moves, but at least it's something. Whereas the British Museum so far have done nothing towards this. Now, the British Museum, which we should probably mention as well, it is a national institution, which means it is governed by Parliament. So there's a Heritage Act that means that cultural property that was acquired before a certain day, I think it's basically before the First World War, if it was acquired by colonial means before that, then it's our cultural property and we own it and we have no obligation to give it back other than a moral one. Well, which means that the British Museum is ruled by this as a national institution in a way that several other museums, or most other museums in the UK, aren't, because they're private institutions. However, there have been adjustments made to this Heritage Act. So say for victims of the Holocaust and from looting after that, there were updates made to the Heritage Act, which meant that those items would be restituted immediately. So we could, or the British government could, pass new additions to the Act to mean that the Benin bronzes or the marbles or whatever we're talking about, they could be returned. They just haven't done so. And they kind of use that as a legal justification to say, oh, well, it's part of the law that we couldn't. But if they partition strongly enough to the government, or the government asked for them to, it could go either way, then they would be obligated to return these objects. It's a sad story for the Benin bronzes. And actually, some individuals in the UK have made further steps than the British Museum themselves have, because there was a grandson of, it was Corporal Walker, who was one of the original troops who went to Benin and did the original sacking of the city. His grandson had inherited two bronzes from his grandfather's expedition. And in 2014, he gave them back to the royal family. He flew to Nigeria and he personally gave them back to the royal family. And they had a celebration and, you know, press conference. And they're treasured cultural artifacts. And from Nigeria's perspective, they should all be reunited, because they are cultural artifacts that were meant to be together, and they're integral to the history of the country.
Yeah.
So
bravo to Germany.
Hopefully.
Let's give credit to the Germans.
Yeah. Yeah. So both Germany and France have made steps in the right directions, but so far not the British Museum. And there are actually other museums in the UK which own Benin bronzes, but which are not national institutions, so they could do it by themselves. But so far, I don't think any have. But they should definitely take a long, hard look at themselves and see if they want to come out on the villainous side of history.
You reminded me now about a funny experience I had in 2020 in Jan, basically the last conference I visited before the pandemic. It was a conference of cultural management in University of Groningen in the Netherlands. And one of the topics was decolonization, obviously. And we had several museum managers from the Netherlands who participated in the talks. We spoke about decolonization. They seemed very open about it, but their actions didn't really show progressiveness and desire to change certain colonial aspects in their institutions. So what I noticed is that our generation, basically millennials, Generation Z, basically people in their 20s and 30s, are very progressive about such ideas. But unfortunately, people in charge of institutions and museums are not ready to make this step. Because in order to do that, you would cause a lot of backlash in society, and society is not ready. So many people who are responsible for taking these decisions are just afraid to do them. They know that this has to be done, but they're just not ready to do it. So
yeah, it's going to be done at some point.
Yes, at some point, yeah.
When the next generation of people do take, you know, roles in positions of power in these cultural institutions, it's going to be people our age or from our generation, and we're going to do it. So they're just delaying the inevitable.
Exactly. Well, guys, I mean, so far we have been very critical towards the British Museum, but what are their arguments behind their reluctance to repatriate heritage?
I mean, one of their big arguments is to do with protection, that they have the facilities to perform the right conservation levels, to preserve the artifacts in the correct conditions, and also the UK is a reasonably stable country. And has been for quite a while now. So they say that they're kind of safe from war or radicalism, which could destroy the objects. So potentially if an object was returned to an unsafe nation where there is constant war and uprising and religious radicalization, which causes people to destroy heritage, which we are facing in the world today, that would be a disservice to world heritage, and therefore they are protecting them in one place where they'll be kept safe. But I think in the examples that we're looking at. I mean, especially Greece, like, okay, there's potential for war at times, maybe, but there's not any radicalism here that's going to cause people to break the marbles and shoot them. And that's kind of one of their original arguments, isn't it? That, oh, well, the Ottomans were using them for target practice, so we saved them and we preserved them because they would have just been destroyed there anyway. But it's not the Ottoman Empire anymore. It hasn't been for 200 years. Happy anniversary, Greece.
I think also, like, we need to pay our respects to Egypt as well. They've just opened the Grand Egyptian Museum, which kind of turns that argument on its head for Egypt now. I mean, I guess there is a bit more conflict going on over there, but they've got a dedicated safe place, relatively in situ, for its artifacts. And they are a massive country wanting to repatriate their objects, which are admittedly all over the world, but of course in the British Museum as well.
Here again, I suppose we speak also about politics and patriotism in a way, I guess.
Although, another one of their arguments is that they're against nationalism by encouraging cultural awareness that there's ethnographical enrichment of mankind through the accessibility of objects in one place, that you can see cultures from all over the world in one place and therefore appreciate them and therefore not be caught up in nationalism.
But again, there are some particular cases such as the marbles that it's kind of offensive that such artifacts are located in the British Museum and they're not in the original place.
This issue, the modern contextualization of issues surrounding objects in there, are of course not put on display either. And in fact, on that note, the problematic sides, much like the statues towards objects in the museum, are also not on display. Not only are they not giving them back, but they're also like not choosing to tell the whole story surrounding the conflict around potential objects.
Yeah, so they're not actually doing the retain and explain policy that the government is so keen on, that we keep the objects and we contextualize them in the right way, but they're not doing that with the marbles.
Yeah.
They're not saying Greece has been asking for these back for the last 100 years and we've just not given them.
You know, I remember when I visited the museum for the first time, and I was thinking, how lucky are Londoners and British people living and being able to access this? And why London, in fact, is such a multicultural city, and why Londoners are so open-minded people. And one of the reasons for that is that such institutions are there. And I believe that such institutions are important for cities because young people have access to different cultures. But then such museums, I suppose, need to change.
That's for London. For someone like me who's from Australia, I don't have access to that.
Yes,
and
yes.
You in Europe as well, it's much closer. So who is this World Museum really for as well?
Yeah, when you think that in the Southern Hemisphere, there are, I think Australia is one of the only nations that has universal museums of that kind of nature, because there are hardly any on the African continent outside of Egypt. And South America. So, yeah, it's very much a place of European privilege or North American privilege, like that kind of Western Eurocentric, like white privilege, basically. Because, I've heard also the argument that, say, the British Museum, they paid for the research and storage of the objects. They've found their provenance. They've researched them and found out how they were used, perhaps if they were, they fell out of use for several hundred years and therefore that very little was known about them. So they found them and excavated them and researched them, and they've paid for the storage and care and conservation. So now they have a stake in those objects. But I just think that's such a like white privilege point of view, isn't it?
Exactly.
It's like, oh, well, we had the money and the resources to be able to do this.
Exactly. Also, like, well, these cultures didn't ask them to do that.
The world has developed enough and each country has enough money to take proper care of such artifacts.
Because Nigeria don't currently have a museum to house the Benin bronzes, but they are currently constructing a storage facility for them where they can be put into, safe care until the museum is constructed in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
So they're taking steps towards that. Even if they don't have the institution to be able to do it now, they're working towards it. And I think other nations would probably be in the same place, where if they don't have something in place now, you know, they'd probably be happy for the British Museum to hold on to those things until they're ready to house them. But it's an issue of ownership and consent that they have allowed it to stay in the British Museum, and they've given it the consent for it to stay there. And then when they ask for it back, they get it back.
Well, I guess that's a nice end.
As you said, the British and London's population is very diverse. So the international diaspora can visit the museum and see artifacts from their homelands that they could relate to, or, you know, the things that their ancestors used that they might not otherwise have access to. But that's very much privileged to London, and other countries around the world would not have that kind of access.
Do you want to say something, Nikki?
You know, by claiming artifacts from Greece, Rome, Egypt, you know, Britain kind of is presenting themselves as an heir to the world's greatest civilizations. Like, of course, the massive colonnade at the entrance is almost an exact mimic of the architecture of ancient Athens.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's like claiming this successorship from such civilizations. If we think about this colonial aspect, is it kind of a claim to the power and domination over these civilizations as well? Because, you know, nowadays when people visit the museums, they try and find a piece of themselves in the halls. You know, the Greeks go to the marbles, the Egyptians to Egypt, Chinese to the Chinese dynasty halls. They go to find themselves in the museum. They ask themselves, and we have to ask, why aren't these in their own country? It's how power works. Like, it shows that your culture is in here. It is ours. We are taking it. It belongs. And it kind of designates the visitor to be put in their place. And I'm not saying that this is the aim of the museum now, because I'm sure it's not. But when we think of how it was built and on the grounds in which and the times in which it was built, it was the global power balance. So, of course, they are asserting the power.
Yeah, and it was definitely originally othering and exoticizing. Yeah. And, you know, like Polly said about the Oriental displays in the Louvre, kind of just like, oh yeah, that's the other stuff. Look how exciting and interesting it is, but we own it now, so that makes us special and powerful. Yeah, you're right.
Which can't help but have a hangover effect into the present as well, I think.
Yeah, because we're shaped by our colonial past, whether we like to kind of explore that element to the nation or not. And we like to think we're nice and multicultural and accepting and not as racist as other countries, but it's in our cultural DNA, so it's still something that we have to address.
So, guys, I hope you enjoyed this episode. It was a very complicated topic. I felt that I'm a bit unprepared because it's so multifaceted and there are so many aspects to it. It's related to politics, identity, and colonialism. And I think all of us agree that institutions like the British Museum have a certain place in the cultural sector. However, they need to drastically change. And this change will come sooner or later.
Oh, hello, it's us again, checking in from the future.
Hope you enjoyed our final episode of season one. We will be back after a short break with some new fun topics.
New content.
As typical Europeans, we're gonna take August off.
Yeah, it's very strange for Izan and I.
Yeah.
Just pausing our usual lives for the summer.
Yeah, but that's what they do in Greece. So when in Athens,
you're an outsider if you don't. Nothing's open, nothing works. So
I think it's everywhere in Europe. In general, like, August is really like nothing works. Public sector doesn't work. You cannot process any documents in the municipality or the...
I mean, you say Europe. I'm not sure Germany is the same. But,
okay, so should we say, what do we think about our experience during the last 5 months? 5 months, right? I think we started in March.
Wow, that's a long time.
Okay, let's take a short moment to be a bit self-reflective and see what this podcast has brought to light. It's been, you know, it came out on a whim. It's been a bit of a YOLO experience. Why not? Lockdown, bored, need some fun in our lives, need some drinks, need some friends. And yeah, that's how it came to be. And guys, what are your thoughts on how it's paved out?
I think I've learned more than I thought I was going to. Like, obviously I knew we were going to do research for this, but especially when it comes to topics like the Olympics and Eurovision, I definitely learned more than I was expecting.
Yeah.
I think Eurovision was the most insightful topic.
Guys.
And also Robben Island.
Yeah. Robben Island, the Hacienda. Guys, thank you for that one. I had no idea about the birth of rave culture.
Yeah. So I think all of us can take something away and and think that we've broadened our heritage horizons.
Yes. Which, by the way, if you've been wondering why our topics are so broad, that is the epitome of heritage. It is anything and everything you can kind of justify it to be or want it to be.
Yeah.
So it's safe to say that our saison number two will also be an amalgamation of different topics from ancient times to present day, and you can expect to see more good stuff.
We have some topics outlined already, but if you as listeners have a great idea for us, don't hesitate to get involved and contact us on our social media. Nikki, what is our social media platforms?
You can find us at Museums Mojitos on Instagram and Twitter, and the podcast's full name on Facebook. But yeah, please do let us know what you want to hear about, because for us, this is a massive learning opportunity and it is such a pleasure exposing ourselves and then you guys to something new also.
We're still finding our way through that difficult task of handling social media, having a podcast, working 9 to 5 during the week. So sometimes we know that maybe we are not that perfect, but we are really trying our best.
Please support us.
Oh yeah, and if you would like to leave us a rate and review on any of our podcast platforms, such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud. Then please do rate and review us, because that really helps get us out there and get us more attention from a wider audience.
All your interactions help us so much. So whenever you can, and if you would like to, like, share, subscribe,
ring that bell.
You know the drill. No, but please help us continue what we want to do. We really want to, we really try actually to create a platform where we can share, like we said, heritage of all sorts, and especially delve into histories and heritage of parts of the world and communities that don't usually get light shined on them. And we will continue to elevate voices that usually oppressed by society.
Yeah, that's the goal.
But yeah, so August is here. I'm off on a dig. I'm going to work on the archaeological site of Amphipolis in northern Greece. Izan, you're moving to an island?
I am. I'm moving apartments. So the next time you hear from me, I'm going to have a new home, a new island home.
Woohoo! Polly's doing some Nat Geo stuff.
Yeah, he's going to be the next David Attenborough. So when you hear from us next time, things will be different but the same as ever. And we look forward to hearing from you, and hopefully you'll join us for season 2.
Woohoo! Thanks so much, guys. We love you.